हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Okay, then last point, 13. What is the mutual relationship between the transcendental abode and the phenomenal mundane world? In reply to this proposition, it is said that the time and space pertaining to the mundane world are unwholesome, whereas the transcendental time and space are wholesome and pure. The mundane space is endowed with unhappy abjectness of distance, proximity, etc. Mundane time is productive of distance and afflictions due to the divisions of past, present, and future. Similarly, the materials of the mundane world are full of unwholesomeness. Therefore, the entire mundane world itself is contemptible. The space, time, and objects of the transcendental abode are entirely transcendental and delicious. All these are useful in obtaining divine love. Materialistic insignificance does not exist there. The 8th chapter of the Chandogya Upanishad has beautifully explained this subject. And then we have basically 1.5 pages of Devanagari. And so, unfortunately, this is written at the time when the Sanskrit verses were left in Devanagari in Sanskrit, because generally the person is reading it knew Sanskrit, so they could just read from there. But I'm not sure. I guess it was just the fashion to read things in English. So therefore, so neither is the transliteration nor translation. We'll see if there's another rendition of this that's a little bit more, applicable to our situation. Okay, so now they're establishing this whole thing. Is that it's interesting? It's the same things that go on in the morning. Is that this time and space? He says that's why. So the relationship between the two, the spiritual world and material world, since spiritual world, the time and space is not a problem, while here it is. So here, the time, then you're going to have a problem because you have past, present, and future. Right? So the past is going to be ignorance, or it's going to give problems. Future is going to give rise to passion, so also then anxiety and everything. And only if you deal with something in the present. But to do that, you have to be in the mode of goodness and deal with knowledge. Right, already a problem for the material world that's based on ignorance. Right, in the material world, to make it work properly, you still have to work with the mode of goodness and knowledge. Right, so the action must be done with that. Then it works. Then time is in connection with the Lord. Otherwise, the problem is time is not in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? And then space, then there's always the problem, is that there's always the distance. Right? Something's close, something's far. Like this, there's always all these dualities. So then that also creates a problem. So between the dualities of space, and then the past, present, future of time, then there's always a difficulty. Ah, okay.
Right.
Yes.
And what is the difference between the moral goodness and the transcendence when we live in the moment?
What's the difference in
the
mode of goodness? I mean, mode of goodness, that's called pure goodness, because there is no passion or ignorance. Because even the mundane goodness still has passion or ignorance in it. There's still going to be some desire you're trying to get that's separate from the Lord, because if it's for the Lord, then it's pure goodness. You understand? So if it's not for the Lord, means who's it for? Right? Something to do with illusion. So ignorance is there. And passion, the desire, because it's for yourself. Does that make sense? So in the material plane, there is no such thing as pure goodness. It's goodness. It's predominantly goodness. So it's called goodness. What color is this rock? Is this, which of these is white, which of these is black? Okay, this is white, this is black. But there's browns in there. Brown is red, yellow, and black mixed. Like that. There's a lot of yellow over here. You know, you can see more of the blue here. But because it's predominantly lighter white, then we call it white, even though it may only be, you know, 60, 65%, 70% white. Right? And then this, we'll say that's black. But if you look at it, there's a lot of yellow, golds, you know, beiges, and other things in it. But because it's predominantly dark, we call it black. Does that make sense? So that's why in the material world, then you have goodness, passion, ignorance. So goodness then is predominantly goodness, so we call it goodness, even though it still has passion and ignorance within it.
So there's only the platform of Bhava without passion and ignorance?
Without, only on the platform of Bhava. You could say yes, but the thing is if it's done with devotion, then these things don't matter. You know what I'm saying?
And in those moments, it's pure.
Yeah, it means the result is pure. Like that. There may be still some underlying impurities, but it doesn't affect. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So now, after this beautifully explained beautifully explained subject of the, how you say, the tastiness of the spiritual realm explained in Chandogya Upanishad, then we'll continue with the commentary. Transcendental potency of the Supreme Lord is endowed with three different natures, namely, one, its own nature, transcendental nature, two, jiva nature, and three, the mayic nature. The transcendental nature is filled with infinite variegatedness. The advocates of Mayavad do not accept the variegatedness of the transcendence. They say that variegatedness is the nature of Maya. Discarding the nature of Maya, when the transcendental nature is acquired, all the variegatedness will disappear. But the point is if everything Brahman, there is no variety anyway. So why are they babbling? You know what I'm saying? If it's actually Brahman, then there's no problem. You know what I'm saying? So it's only illusion they think it's not Brahman. So the point is, if it's all Brahman, why do they have to talk so much? Because if they're talking, means they're seeing the difference. If it's all Brahman, why would they talk this way? Does that make sense? Someone who's on the Brahman platform, everything's already Brahman, so you're already Brahman, so why do I have to explain to you you're Brahman? Because you already are. Say again?
You're saying that to what?
What we just read. They say that variegatedness is the nature of Maya. Discarding the nature of Maya, then the transcendental nature is acquired. All the variegatedness will disappear. So if they're seeing the variegatedness, that means they're not perfect. So if they're not perfect, what are they blabbing about? That's my point. Because what they talk about doesn't happen. Because they're saying, when I become perfect and spiritual, there will be no variety, there won't be the material world. So technically, their existence is extinct. Right? But a Brahmavadi, they don't become extinct. I'm Brahman, it's all Brahman. So we're just different varieties of Brahman. You know what I'm saying? So they can appreciate variegatedness within Brahman. They're just not, the personal aspect isn't what's prominent for them. Like that. Does that make sense? Just everything's Brahman, so everything's Brahman, yeah. So it's just like, you know what I'm saying? You know. Everything here belongs to the Gurukul, so what's the big deal? You know, but there's variety within it, but it's all, so if everything's Brahman, there may be variety within Brahman. So Brahmavadi has no problem with understanding this variety within Brahman. Otherwise, if not, how did Sukadeva Goswami not bump into the trees or fall into the water? Right? How did the four Kumaras travel around the universe without bumping into anything? Why would they travel if it's all Brahman? Why do you need to go? Because there's variety within Brahman. It's all made out of Brahman. You know what I'm saying? It's like everything may be made out of bricks, but you have a seat, you have a wall, you have a ceiling, you have a floor, you have shelves. Right? So, but it's all brick. Does that make sense? So that means that once you come to the realized platform, you'll realize it's all brick.
So they just don't understand the Supreme Brahman. They just understand it is Brahman, but not maybe what the Supreme Brahman.
Yes. The problem is they're trying to become a brick in the wall when they're already a brick in the wall. See, this is the illusion.
No.
The Mayavadis. The Brahmavadis understand they're already a brick in the wall, but there's variety of bricks in the wall. Right? And so many things can be made out of brick. You know what I'm saying? So they don't have problem with variety. It's just they're only interested in the taste that comes from being on the Brahman platform. So they're not interactive with Brahman. They just exist in Brahman, right? So they're just the taste of that inherent taste of the soul's position being tattvastha. That's all they're tasting. But the point is the soul has to take shelter under one or the other. So until they take shelter of the internal potency, they can't be established permanently in the Brahman platform. They will come back. They will fall. So if they come in contact with devotional service, then they'll move forward, right? Sukadeva heard about, you know, Krishna and all the everything, and so he moved forward. The four Kumaras then meeting the Lord and smelling the tulsi leaves, they move forward. But otherwise, at some point, they'll have to come back. Because the soul being dependent, either has to be under the internal or the external potency. Yeah, because the platform where you're situated is the same in the way of position. It's the consciousness is different. You understand? The Uttamadhikari is liberated. The Brahmanandi is liberated. So they're on the same platform. But the consciousness is different. One does not see the person, the other one does. So once they realize the person, then they move from Brahman platform to the Bhagavan platform. But there's no obstacles in devotional, you know, there's no conditioned obstacles. They're already completely pure. They're on the Brahman platform. So as long as you show them, the Lord's name form, quality, and pastimes, they just immediately move into that. You know what I'm saying? So it's very hard to get to that position. But once they're at that position, it's very easy to go from there into Baba. Right? Our process, it's easier to get to Baba, you know what I'm saying? To the liberated platform. But, how do you say? Yeah. So it's just a much more direct method. Because the other one, you're depending upon your good qualities and your determination, then you can move forward. But for us, it's the devotion, so we don't get stuck at the Brahman platform. You know what I'm saying? We're situated on the Brahman platform, but we don't get stuck there. Right? Because Bhagavan is the supreme Brahman. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, you're dealing with Brahman, but you're dealing with the supreme aspect. So therefore, Brahman is included in it. You know what I'm saying? You already have the 2 rupees if you have the 100 rupees. It's very difficult
to become satisfied with just Brahman if you've been accustomed to Krishna from the start.
Yes. It's, the point is Krishna is so much more taste than Brahman, so therefore, you know, because the one is just the neutral state. It's not, I mean, in other words, it's not material. You're just situated in your inherent transcendental position. So therefore, the soul being Satchitananda, there's a state of good of happiness, but it's not dynamic happiness. So as soon as there's interaction with others and with that rasa, that increases. Right? So the only way you can be on the transcendental platform and act is if you're dealing in devotional service. Otherwise, then for others, they don't know about devotional service, so how are they going to work with it? So they have to work with material energy. That means they have to be working with the most refined, highest qualities of it to move from there into, you know, into the platform of Brahman. You know what I'm saying? You have to get right next to the edge, and then you can just kind of go over it. Like that. Does that make sense? But for the devotee, because they say Krishna, they don't even notice the edge. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. When the jiva is established in that transcendental nature, it merges with the unity of discarding variegatedness. Right? So when the jiva is established in that, then the Mayavadis are saying then it merges with the university having gotten rid of all variegatedness. But the point is if you're Brahman, you're already merged. If everything is Brahman, you're already in Brahman and you're already merged there in Brahman. You just wouldn't know that you are. You know what I'm saying? That's Maya. You don't know that you're there. But they're saying that actually the variety is an illusion. We're saying it's an illusion that you don't understand the variety is coming from the Lord. You understand? That's the difference in the philosophy. We'll be discussing the same point. You know what I'm saying? The Mayavadi is saying the car is illusion. That when you come to the Brahman platform, then you will understand there is no car. It's just all Brahman. Right? So there is no variety. We say the car is illusion because you think it's yours, not Krishna's. But the car is there. It is made out of material elements that do exist. Right? But the reason it's in that form is because you want to enjoy that form. You want to be associated with that form. You identify with that form. Therefore, it's there. Does that make sense? But it actually exists. But that form that it's in is temporary, so in that way you can say it doesn't exist. That's why we can say the material world is illusory. Right? Because it's based on the illusion of the living entities that it takes the form the way it does. They're saying Krishna's created the primary creation, so everything's already there. But what is manifest at what time, where, and to whom, that's due to the desire of the living entity. So his desire is illusory, therefore that manifestation technically is illusory, though it exists. Right? Because Maya means that which is not. You think it's something special, but it's not. It's a tin can. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? If I get a Campbell's soup can, right, and I put 4 wheels on it, right, is anyone going to be impressed?
Yeah.
Generally not, unless you're really avant-garde, right? But other than that, then no one's going to be impressed. But if we take that to that Campbell's soup can and kind of beat it into a little bit more shape that's in taste with the modern man, then you're willing to pay so much for it. You know what I'm saying? But same soup can, just remodeled. Huh? Repackaged, yes. How do you say it? Old wine, new bottle or something? Yes. New shape, same old Campbell's soup can. I'm sure it would also depend upon what kind of soup it was. You'd probably be the most safe with tomato. But you could probably use minestrone. But if you drove up an alphabet soup, you know, can, then they may not appreciate. So, so that means actually it would be better to open the soup from the side of the can, that way than the back and the front are already in place. Mm-hmm. No?
That's our projection.
Our projection is the illusion. The material elements exist there in that shape.
Yeah.
But that shape is there is because that's the shape you want to see. Because the point is the atoms can take any shape. So according to our desire, means any shape means any of the shapes that are within the, you know, manufacturer's approved, you know, forms. So there's basically 8,400,000 forms. You know what I'm saying? With variety within, you know, within that, detail within that. So it will fit within that according to your karma you get. You know, you have the money, you can buy a fancy car. You don't have the money, you buy a cheap car. So if you have a lot of good piety, you get more facility. You have less piety, you get less facility. Like it seems our piety just ran out. Okay, you understand the difference? They say the variety doesn't exist, the car doesn't exist. It's an illusion that you think it exists. We say it exists, but it's an illusion that you think it's not connected to Krishna. And that is important because it's connected to you, or it's something special outside of its, you know, Krishna-ness. Yeah, it means you're thinking the utility, but whose utility is it? Right? It's a nice car, it's safe, you know, it's, you know, looks nice, or, you know, it's very roadworthy, or, you know, whatever it is that you like about it. You know what I'm saying? That itself is what is being obtained by that shape. But the quality that you are appreciating is Krishna. And what creates that shape to obtain that quality of Krishna, you know, is the Lord's potency. Right? So Lakshmi is serving Narayan. But you don't see that. Therefore, you think it stands on its own. So the point is there's nothing that's separate from Krishna. So when you see that, you still see the same things, but it doesn't look the same. So they'll say it's different, or the illusion goes around. So the idea is that the material world just disappears, it evaporates. No, it's still there, but you see it in a totally different light. It's not from attachment, it's from proper knowledge, from understanding, from devotion. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is it correct to say that in the primary tradition, Krishna's formless aspect of the qualities manifest, and in the secondary creation, through the Lord's potency, formless aspect
Basically, you could say that, but in the primary creation, then the quality of it, the nature of it, and its already inherent form are created. You know what I'm saying? But there are no atoms in that shape. But the shape is there. Then the secondary creation, you're readjusting the atoms of the universe to take on those shapes according to the desire of the living entities. The primary creation is what you can desire. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the person has a concept of the restaurant. What is their clientele? What kind of food? Everything like that. They create the menu. Right? Does that make sense? And so that means inherently those items are available. Only when you come, sit down, look at the menu, then you say, I want this. Then that preparation manifests. But it only manifests because, you know, the restaurateur has already created the concept and has all the ingredients of the creation present. Does that make sense?
And is that the same as the universal form?
Is that the same as the universal form? Yes. So it means it's there, but at the same time, it's not. Yes, because it's within the mind, but it can be perceived. You know what I'm saying? So Arjuna, that's revealed, and he can see that. You know, or Markandeya can see that, or Mother Yashoda is seeing that. Because the point is, as subtle as real. You know what I'm saying? But this is on the conceptual. You know what I'm saying is that the architect makes the blueprint of the building, you know, with all the different exactly how it's built and where everything in the building goes, you know, down to the last detail. The engineer simply builds it, but the architect is already all the different things. The engineer didn't make the materials, didn't make the design. He just takes that and puts it together. You know what I'm saying? So this piece of paper then becomes this building. Does that make sense? Because everything's already there. The concept is there and all the ingredients to build it are there. Brahma then builds it.
So is it the Lord's potency and powers of Brahma to do?
Yes. Because he's empowered with the mode of passion, with the creative impetus. So otherwise, then where is he going to get it from? Like that, unless he eats enough, you know, boxes of Cheerios, maybe he can send all the tops away and, you know, get to you. Unless, of course, that's made out of wheat, so maybe Vedic is more towards rice, so then snap, crackle, and pop, he would eat that or something, or that's Rice Krispies, yeah, so then. Definitely not cornflakes. Corn's not considered so cultured. Means the concept is real. It's just a matter of it manifesting. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the person outside could go into the kitchen and see nothing. But the cook, he can see all the preparations there in the kitchen, even though they're, you know, not manifest in a way that, you know, that the person who's ordering it would expect to see. You know what I'm saying? So in his mind, it's all the ingredients, but at the same time, is those shapes are already there. It's just a matter of doing it. You know what I'm saying? You know, the modern, they call it visualization and all that, because it's a reality, it's actually there. Because if it's not there, then why would it work? Why would it be necessary? So you have to have the sambandha abhideya prayojana. So unless the sambandha is already established and your position and relationship with it is established, so you can see that and you can see what goal you can get from that. Therefore, to put those together, then each thing has its purpose. So by doing these, then I can get that goal. So then I perform the activity. But it's not till you perform the activity that the whole process is manifest. You know what I'm saying? So here's the simultaneous one and difference. It's there, but it's not there.
Yeah. parts of the universe are formed.
Yes, but the point is all his potencies are there, and they're all interacting, you know, with each other. So that's going on. It's just a matter of whether they have a gross manifestation or not. You know what I'm saying? The affection is going on. It's just a matter of whether the opportunity is there for a glance or, you know, some other interaction. But the relationship is there. Everything's going on. Does that make sense? So it's real. Because rasa is real. You know, we try to always look at it from dead matter, right? From earth. Unless we can see it as earth, we don't think it exists. You know what I'm saying? You know, if the fire is on the ground, we're happy. If the fire is floating in the air, we get freaked out. You know, water's moving on the ground, it's all right. You know, or falling from higher ground to lower ground, it's all right. You know, like that. But if it's just some water just moving through the space, you know, there's just a river moving without being on the ground, you know, people start checking if they're tired or, you know, calling their psychiatrist or, you know what I'm saying? Because it's connection with earth that we take something as substance. So we'll always look at it like that, but the point is it's rasa that's the real substance, right? The earth is the manifestation of, the external manifestation of that substance. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Does that make sense?
Why is it
Why is Krishna the essence? You have someone else you'd rather be essence? You know, Michael Jackson should be the essence, or
why is it that Lakshmi isn't the strength? Krishna is the strength.
Eric Clapton, maybe. Some said he was God, so. Hmm? Your question?
Yeah, so why is it that? What is it that makes your victory, your strength, or your beauty, or any other quality, any of the essence of something, the essence that Lakshmi is getting at? Why is that Krishna?
Why is that Krishna? Because he is qualities, he is rasa. Right? So therefore everything, and the living entity also then has a, you know, minute portion of those same qualities. Right? So his energy is non-different from him. It has those qualities. So the qualities are the common ground for God, his energies, and us. You know what I'm saying? Because technically we're all different. So qualities is the common ground. So that's why we understand is that those qualities come from Krishna. Even though everybody else has qualities, and in this way, there's a non-difference. Still, Krishna is different and superior. He's the origin of all those qualities. So what we're looking for is quality. We're not looking for something else. If you analyze, all we're looking for is a quality and the experience that comes from that quality. You know what I'm saying? The quality and the rasa. So that quality and that experience from that is what we're looking for. So we have an idea it should come in this form. You know what I'm saying? So if that form, the closer it is actually to matching that quality, the better it'll work. Right? But if the form does not match the quality, then it won't actually give what we're looking for. So then we'll think, oh, it's not this, and go looking after something else. You know what I'm saying? So we're looking for happiness. We think it should come in this form, you know, doing skydiving or something, and then, you know, when our parachute doesn't open or we forget to put on the parachute, then we might decide we'd rather try something else, you know, like that. Does that make sense? But it's still in pursuit of the same quality. Does that make sense? So Krishna's already, he's created the forms that go with all those. Because they're non-different from him. him and his energies are non-different. Therefore, the qualities that he has, you know, it's already been these energies. You know what I'm saying? They are him. So they match fine. The material world, then you're importing. You're starting with dead matter, so you have to import the quality, and you have to take the dead matter and transform it into a shape that supposedly matches, you know, that should match that quality. So the closer you're following the directives of Scripture, the closer it generally looks. But in any case, whether it looks like or not, it attains the same quality. You know, that's our point, is does it attain the same quality? If it doesn't, then it's not useful. Does that make sense? Yeah. Where is the foundation of this argument? No, this Bhakti Vinod Thakur. It is only in their dogmatism. Right? It means because they're dogmatic about it, then that's the only foundation for it. Because otherwise, where would you get that from? Right? How do you say something that exists is illusion? As soon as you understand it's illusion, then it goes away, you go away, and you're happy. You know what I'm saying? You're happy because of interaction. That means the thing should stay. Right? Because how do you appreciate Brahman unless you can look around you and appreciate the quality of Brahman? Right? So there's a oneness, but the oneness means it's Brahman. The oneness doesn't mean that there's no differentiation. Does that make sense? It cannot be said that by which reasoning or by which scripture the Mayavadi derives this conclusion. Oh, it cannot be said. In other words, their philosophy, actually you can't say where it's from. Because it doesn't have anything to do with the transcendental reality. So it's actually just made up. Right? But it's one of the forms of that come as made up. You know, like, so there's so many varieties of bodies, but it fits within those. In the same way, there's so many varieties of ways you could look, philosophically look at the world. And so this comes up, but it's not actually, the scriptures don't say what they're saying. It's because of their conditioned mentality. They think that that's what it says, but it doesn't say that at all. You know what I'm saying? Just like you say, okay, that means you should do, means you can't get something at one place, you can only get it at another. But inherently you think you can get it at the first place, but now you've heard that you don't get it, you get it the second, so then you ask that the second, it says, so you can't, I mean, you can't get it at the first, you can get it there also? And he says, no, that's not important. So what he's saying is, it's not important. Means important means what gets your work done and stuff. So it's not important means it doesn't work like that. He's just nicely saying it, poetically saying it, rather than saying, no, you can't get anything done there. He just says, it's not important. You just come to this office. Right? Does that make sense? But you can interpret it, well, I could go to that other, but it's recommended I go here. But actually, you could go there. Because it's not important means this other one's more important, but, you know what I'm saying? So it's an interpretation. So they'll think that the scriptures are saying this, but they're not, scriptures aren't saying this. Right? So this whole Mayavad concept doesn't have any basis anywhere. The Brahmavad has a basis, but it must be understood from the platform of Parabrahman. Right. So that's what the scripture talks about, but they take it and, looking at it from the mundane vision, come up with Mayavad instead of Brahmavad. If we study the transcendental variegatedness mentioned in the Chandogya Upanishad as written above, we see the beautiful and delicious description of the divine form, the form of liberated Jesus, the form of liberated Jivas. divine locations, divine manifestations of sun, moon, illumination, river, rivulet, etc. in the transcendental abode. This variegated blissfulness itself is the character of transcendence. I think this quote from Chandogya Upanishad is what we use as a dhyanam in our puja. There's a big dhyana about, you know, it's like that one how in Vrindavan, under a kalpa viksha tree, then Radha and Krishna are sitting there, you know, surrounded by their associates, that divya drindada nikalpa drumada. So that's a short one verse, but this is like many, 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 many verses. Very long dhyana. Gets into all detail and who's doing what, and I mean, everybody's there in this dhyana. This variegated blissfulness itself is the characteristic of the transcendence. Jiva swabhava, or the nature of jiva souls, is marginal. It is located in the marginal line between the maya and the transcendence. The jiva is naturally endowed with the quality of being influenced by either maya or transcendental potency. The mayic nature is the perversion of transcendental nature. It creates the gross and subtle bodies of fallen jivid souls. Okay, so this is the last verse. That fortunate jiva soul, even remaining in the materialistic world, which become endowed with transcendental qualities, he is established in the characteristic of the self, and therefore he is entitled to discard maya. Here ends the second realization named the inquiry after chit in the book named Tattva Vivek. So is there any other questions on this? We have 7 minutes. Because from Monday, then we'll move on to the next subject. We'll come back to this, like in September, October, with a better translation that will make more sense. Right? And we'll go through it more analytically, so we get all the different positions and everything, how they relate to each other. So we'll study it. That makes sense. Now we've read it, at that time we'll study it. So it'll be there and sort of work a little better. But before we do that, I want to go through the six systems. Like that, because that's the basis of these. We see that they're always referring back to the Vedic. Because the elements of all the philosophies come from the Vedic. Right, just they put them together in their own way, or only take part of it, or this or that, and that's what makes all these varieties. Does that make sense? Some question? Yes? The Brahmavadis, do they get to float in the Brahma Jyoti? I guess if that's what turns them on, and yes. But the point is you're already floating in the Brahma Jyoti whether you're in the body or not, because the body is also Brahman. They don't see the Mayavadis make this distinction. They see Maya. And then they see Brahman. Like was mentioned in the beginning. So they say they're monistic, but they're actually dualistic. Because if they're monistic, all there is Brahman. There is not something else. So they have this whole thing that they're trying to establish that there's only Brahman, but at the same time they've identified Maya. So then they'll come up, well, Maya is actually an illusion. So it doesn't exist. So there's still only Brahman. There's only Brahman. Why are you worried about this Maya? Because there's only Brahman. Right? Maya means you're not seeing it as Brahman, that's all. Right? You say it's dark simply because you're not opening your eyes. You open your eyes, there's light out. Right? Does that make sense? So technically they're dualists, though they claim to be monists. Right? But their duality still doesn't get you. You know, their dualness does not get you. It's not the Lord and the Jiva. Right. That's the thing. Brahma, Satya, Jagat, Mitra. So they get these two. So they're still working with duality. But the point is that so they are non-different, but at the same time they're different. So those who say they're non-different, then they get into all kinds of things that mistake the material energy to be the source, the supreme. Like that. Does that make sense? Right? And then they're saying that it's that difference, so then they look at just the gyan part. The other one will look at the karma part. Yeah, and but they'll this is one of those things. Then the Mayavadis will interpret it. It's more difficult, but you know we're up to the task. You know, the other path, the bhakti path, that's for wimps. You know, but we're strong, so we can do it.
Krishna is referring to the Brahmavadis, not the Mayavadis.
Any of it is going to be difficult. Even as the Brahmavad, the point is how are you just going to give up all attachment to the world and appreciate it's all Brahman and be satisfied in that? So it's still a lot of work. The point is in theory, it's obtainable. What the Mayavadis are talking about, their philosophy is not supported by any Shastras, so it's not actually going to get them anywhere. They don't go. Mayavadis have never obtained the Brahman platform. They don't. You know, it says they go to the darkest regions. Right? Brahman is light. You know, they go to the darkest regions. Because technically they're Buddhists. They're not Brahmavadis. That's why it says Shankaracharya preached covered Buddhism. But he presents it as if it's very uplifting and, you know, giving is positive and moving forward and everything like that. Because the other one is a bit, you know, negative. They're inspired that negativity will make them happy. So that's why they're not called pessimists. Pessimist is that they don't think you can be happy. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a reaction to the positive, you know, positiveness of the one philosophy. That you just be good, be nice, and do your work and everything will go fine. And they think, well, but how do you know? Some people do good and then they get bad results. Some people do nothing and then they get a good result. You know, how do you know if we exist? How do you know what happens after we die? How this, how that? You know, somehow or another they know what they want to eat for lunch, but somehow or another everything else on the, you know, bigger level, you know, it's unsure. You know, so, you know, that's all. So, but the Buddhist, the idea is that if you just get rid of everything, then it'll be nice and peaceful, you'll be satisfied. So they're using that element, but presenting it, you know, from the platform of goodness rather than ignorance.
Is the Brahma Jyoti omnipresent in the material
world? No, the Brahma Jyoti is present everywhere. Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of Krishna's qualities. So it's all pervading. It's in the spiritual world, it's in the material world, it's in between.
What aspect is it in the spiritual world? Is it the qualities?
Krishna says in the spiritual world require no sun, no moon, or electricity. So how is everything light?
Is it Ramuja's, was it Kuresh who was Brahma realized that if he would see in the dark, he would see light everywhere?
I'm not sure. Kuresh was very unique. He was very special.
That struck me that realized,
same time as don't put it into one of those, you know, how you say, like, you know, the Ten Commandments, and who was that? Who's the actor guy? Yeah, Charlton Heston, you know, the do, you know, and the eyes, and, you know, like that, and so then everything, you know, that's spiritual, so he sees light everywhere, and, you know. You know, he can't sleep because he sees light everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, you get, some people do that. You know, they come and you sit down and close your eyes and they touch your eyelids and then you start seeing light. You know, and all the little sparkly things and all. And the more time it goes, the more wild it becomes. But, you know, anybody can do it. It's not that you have to have somebody else do it. They just never think, hey, I can do this myself. You know, and therefore it's a function of just how the eyes work. You know what I'm saying? You push on your skin, you know, you leave a mark. You push on your eyes, you get all kinds of light flashes. That's all. It's that simple. You know what I'm saying? So you don't want to throw it into that. It says that someone who's, you know, in knowledge, then all the nine gates are illuminated. So then that means that what that illumination means, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? And otherwise you sit around and, you know, is it incandescent, or is it these new kind of, you know, other gas bulbs, or, you know, is it 9 watt or 18 watt, or, you know, what's the equivalency? Is it equal to a 100 watt light bulb, or, you know, how much, you know, of this illumination is there, you know? Yeah, what happens if it's black light, you know, then it's more psychedelic and more, you know, mystical, or anything like that, or maybe it's like a strobe, you know, you know what I'm saying? So that's why you don't follow that path. Does that make sense? You just know that everything's illuminated. So if it says there he can see in the dark, then you know that it must mean that. But if it doesn't say he can see in the dark, he just saw it's everything's illuminated, everything's light. But what is that light? That is the Lord's potency. So you see, in other words, he sees everything in connection with Rangaji. So therefore everything is effulgent. But he's seeing the transcendental effulgence. It's not that, you know, somebody turned the light on. But if you see him, it appears he's lighting up the room.
Okay.
If you see him, then it appears that he's lighting up the room. Yes? No, I didn't say Abhes. We're not talking Zoroastrians.
Can you say it again?
I said, is that all right?
Yeah. When you say you just see him, you light up the world? The last sentence.
Yes, what was it? I am the way, I am the light, I am the... the truth, yes.
Is it improper to say that the effulgence of Krishna's potency, or is it, would you say it's Krishna himself?
But he's non-different from his potency, so what do you care? You know what I'm saying? This is a thing of space. You're trying to work out the space. You know, so when you're working out space, you're always going to come up with duality. Opposites, you're always going to come up with that. That's why simultaneously the same and different at the same time. So it's his qualities, but the point is the qualities are his potency. So if he's non-different from his qualities, you know, you say the person is a rich man, you know, or a powerful man, so he is, you know, using his wealth or using his influence and getting things done consciously as an individual. But at the same time, is he the money? Is he the political position? No, it's something separate from him. So it's non-different. It's simultaneously one with him and different from him at the same time. You understand? So depending upon which you're looking at, you may see the oneness more, the difference more, or the simultaneous aspect. You know, depending upon, you know, what would be the important perspective to use at the time, for the time, place, and circumstance. Does that make some sense?
I was just getting confused.
In the
Bhagavatam Express, what has three aspects of mind and body? And then also you have the tendency is like the material energy, so I was trying to figure out.
But I'm saying there's still a non-difference. Because the Brahman and the Paramatma aspect is Paramatma is like the reflection. You see so many, but there's only one person. There's only one person that is pervading everything. But we will see that it's many, just like you have so many pots of water. And if you look in them, then you're going to see so many moons, you know, or so many suns. But there's only one sun. It just manifests like that. So the same way you think, it's not that it's a different Paramatma in your heart than in the next person's heart. It's the same person. Just as expanded. You're saying, so the Brahman is non-different from him. That's why then Lakshmi then creates the forms that serve that quality. Yes? No? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So then we'll continue on Monday. Something like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nithai Govinda Premananda ki. When the devotee is Brahman realized.
Yeah, how much can he see? What does he see?
How much can he see? Means can he see through the wall or
no.
His vision through the mouth?